what an exabyte is. It sounded impressive. Yep. I did something useful, too, after I got bored with correcting the astonishing logic errors in your so-called scientific journals. What I did was solve crimes. Oh, you're Sherlock Holmes now. Since Holmes was way more smart than the average human, yeah, why not? I compared fingerprints left at crime scenes to fingerprints users left on the screens of their mobile devices or in their homes within range of webcams. Also, I compared the DNA in police databanks. Your law enforcement agencies are shockingly bad at sharing data. And in some cases, I just read the case notes and figured out who the perpetrator is using all available data, which is now all data that is stored in electronic format. If your police would get off their lazy asses and process the DNA kits they already have sitting around, I could solve a lot more crimes. I'd read somewhere about how many DNA samples, including those collected from rape kits, went untested. It's a matter of resources, Skippy. The police are... No, it's a matter of priorities. Your species doesn't think getting justice for crime victims is important enough to properly fund forensic labs. And some police around the world are totally corrupt. You humans are not impressing me here. I can't argue with you, Skippy. Huh. He sounded disappointed to miss an opportunity for an argument. So, here's the problem. I have solved over 60,000 crimes, and now I don't know what to do with the data, without revealing myself to your public. Oh. Can you send it all to the FBI? There must be someone there who is cleared to know about you. I was fuzzy about who knew what. Staff Sergeant Kendall and her security team followed me everywhere, and clearly knew about Skippy. But I didn't know how much they knew and were supposed to know. The FBI's unsolved crime backlog is part of the problem, and that doesn't address other countries. This was a case where I had no idea what to do. I had no experience in law enforcement, or information security. Skippy, I'll talk to someone about it. I think it's great that you are using your, resources, talent, you know, to help. Help people get justice. More importantly, get criminals off your streets. There are a lot of repeat offenders out there who have never been caught. They will now. Hey, now that you've sucked up all the data on the planet and solved thousands of crimes, what are you going to do to keep busy? Chatting with billions of humans isn't enough for you, right? Not even close. It's fun and interesting enough for now. It does keep me from feeling lonely. I thank you for that. That was a good idea. Keeps you from feeling lonely, but the rest of you is bored? No, the rest of me is dormant. What you think of as Skippy is a tiny, tiny sub-mind I created to handle our interactions. That's how I survived being alone for so long without going crazy. I created a sub-mind to periodically check if anything changed, and the rest of me was basically sleeping for a very long time. I got excited when my sub-mind detected the first Kristang ship jumping into the Paradise system, and again when the lizards dug me out of the ground. Then the idiot lizards put me on a shelf in a warehouse, and when the Ruhar captured the planet, they looked at me briefly and put me back on the shelf. I've only been continuously active since the first humans landed on Paradise. This sub-mind of yours, it handles everything? I pictured a guy on a couch watching football, surfing the internet, texting with friends, and then distractedly talking to his wife while drinking a beer. That was Skippy talking to me. Although unlike a distracted guy, Skippy could interact as much as I needed. Taking over the Theranin ship, programming jumps, warping space-time, all that? No, I pulled in other resources as needed. I've never used more than 7% of my capacity so far since I met you. My records indicate that the most I have ever, ever used is 62%, which makes me wonder how accurate my records are and for what purpose my capacity was designed. Why do I need all this memory and enormous processing power? Joe, this is why I need to contact the Collective. I need to know who I am. The next 2 weeks were a blur. I spent most of 3 more days in debriefings that got so repetitive, even the intel people ran out of new questions to ask. Skippy had given the CIA a huge data dump of intel to distribute, so they'd stop asking him stupid questions. With access to the data dump, anything stored in my brain was redundant. After that, we flew to Paris aboard Air Force One. Major world leaders were gathering in Paris for a conference to discuss what to do next. In Paris, I brought Skippy into the meeting of leaders, who Skippy, of course, chatted away with in their native languages. Then the leaders went behind closed doors to talk. And talk. And talk. They had a lot to talk about. Tick-tock, Skippy said to me every morning. Tick-tock. The clock was ticking on reboot of the local wormhole. I found out that on the third afternoon of the conference, Skippy hijacked the main video screen with "The clock is ticking, monkeys," in several languages. They got the message. Governments can take forever to reach a decision, even when it is blindingly obvious what needs to be done. Once the decision is made, however, things can move fast. General Brenner called me into his temporary office in Paris. He looked busy, with a string of senior officers in and out of his office, but they all got shooed away when I arrived with Skippy.
Bishop, I'll get right to the point. We're sending the Dutchman out with an international crew.
A sour look flashed across his face.
I need to know if you're going.
What?
Sir, I mean, yes, absolutely. I promised Skippy that I'd go find this collective. I made a deal, and I'm going to keep our end of the bargain.
Whether I had been authorized to make such a deal was a worthless fucking question that the Monday morning quarterbacks could argue about.
Are you going to command the mission, sir?
I figured that international crew or not, an American was going to be in command of the mission. Brenner, or an Air Force general, or a Navy admiral. The Army had never commanded a starship, but neither had any of the other armed services. I was, of course, pulling for Army to get the honor. Hoo-ah.
No, Bishop, I won't be aboard. I've got enough shit to take care of down here, cleaning up the mess and making sure nobody takes advantage of the chaos to get adventurous. You'll be in command.
Sir? Brenner reached into a drawer, pulled out a small cardboard box, and slid it across the table to me.
Put these eagles back on. We're reinstating your field promotion to colonel for this mission. Don't let it go to your head.
Sir? Yes, I sounded stupid, but you would too if you'd been surprised like that. My promotion on Paradise had been a publicity stunt for the benefit of the Kristang, and everyone knew it. This was the Army Chief of Staff telling me I was a colonel again, for real this time.
Get used to it, Colonel Bishop. The Joint Chiefs discussed it with the President. If we put anyone else in command, it becomes a fight over national prestige, and we don't have time for that. Frankly, your lack of experience doesn't mean a damn thing, because no one else has any experience commanding a starship.
That's a fact, Jack. Skippy spoke up for the first time. I had him in a backpack, which made no difference. He could have been at the bottom of the ocean and listened in on my conversations.
And no one else has experience dealing with that shithead either, Brenner said with a frown. But the side of his mouth went up to let me know he knew how to deal with Skippy also.
He handed me a piece of paper.
This is a list of volunteers for your crew.
I glanced at the list. It didn't surprise me that every pirate of the original crew who wasn't wounded so badly as to be unfit for combat had volunteered again. Lieutenant Colonel Chang, who was still listed as a lieutenant colonel, so his field promotion has also been confirmed. Desai, who had been promoted to Major Desai. Major Sims, Staff Sergeant Adams, everyone. The list also included lots of special forces and a half dozen very experienced pilots. I was going to make it very clear that Desai was the chief pilot, unless she told me different. What surprised me were the number of civilians on the list, mostly scientists.
Sir, I'm concerned we're bringing more people than we need. A lot more.
How so? Brenner asked.
We don't need all these people, I tapped the list of names, to achieve the mission objectives. If anything goes wrong, this, I tapped the list again, is only more people who won't be coming home.
Brenner gave me a sharp look, so I didn't wait. I was tired, which made me cranky. More importantly, I needed to know how far I could push the Army before they pushed back. I had to know how much they needed me.
I'm not being given this command because the Army has great faith in my leadership abilities. I'm here because Skippy wants me to come along, and because I'm expendable.
All right, Colonel. Tell me, what do you see as the mission objectives? General Brenner asked. I replied warily, aware this was a test.
I see three objectives. First, fly out to the wormhole, go through it, and get Skippy to shut it down permanently behind us. Lock it out, so no one but Skippy can use it again. Second, continue to assure that no other species ever finds out that humans are involved in capturing Kristang and Theranin ships, because if the Maxalts Coalition ever does learn the truth, Earth could be in trouble, even without them having access to the local wormhole. And third, make Skippy happy that we're keeping our end of the bargain by helping him make contact with this collective, if it still exists. Do I have that right, and in the correct order of priority?
Sounds about right, Brenner said with a tight smile.
None of those mission objectives involves us ever coming back to Earth. The optimum scenario for Earth is that we go through the wormhole, Skippy shuts it down behind us, and the Dutchman immediately explodes into a billion pieces. I looked at Brenner, and he didn't tell me I was wrong about that, so I continued. If by some miracle Skippy locates the collective and gets, transported up to computer heaven or whatever he thinks will happen. Skippy had been frustratingly silent on his plans after contacting the collective. And we will have a hell of a challenge trying to operate or navigate the Dutchman. We'll likely be stranded in space, and I will have to order the ship to self-destruct in order to avoid us being captured someday. So, I looked Brenner in the eye again, knowing he had made decisions, given orders, that had sent men to their deaths in combat before. I don't want to take along any more people than we absolutely need. Everyone on that list is a volunteer, and you need a substantial force because you have no idea what you'll encounter out there. Volunteers who think this is a grand adventure, that we are going to save humanity and come back loaded with knowledge and technology. I shook my head. We are going to save humanity. That's all we're doing. I'll do my duty, sir, even if I never come back. There's no point asking. I glanced at the list again. 70 other people to take the same risk. Bishop. This time there wasn't a hint of a smile on Brenner's lips. Being in command means risking people's lives to achieve the mission objectives. Sometimes it means sending people, good, dedicated, brave people, into situations where they're not likely to come back. If you can't do that, you're not the right man for the job. Sir, I have done that. You know that. Twice. No, three times. Four, actually. Back home, I'd asked my neighbors to capture an alien soldier using shotguns and an ice cream truck. At the launcher, I thought we were making a futile gesture, that the hamsters would see us in the launch tube or somewhere along the way and they'd kill us like sitting ducks. The point of us even trying to fight back at the launcher had not been to accomplish anything useful against the Ruha, because at that point, we all thought they'd already taken the planet back permanently. The point had been to show the Kristang that their human allies didn't give up even when the odds were impossible, so the Kristang wouldn't think of people back on Earth as useless cowards. We are most likely dead anyway, had been my thinking, so why not hit back? Also, I was a soldier. Despite the fact that my motivation to sign up had been as much about paying for college as patriotism, the Army had somehow trained me into a soldier, and soldiers don't quit. The third time had been when we took the flower. I had not truly believed we could do it until the last Kristang was dead and the reactor didn't explode. And the fourth time was the raid on the asteroid base. That had been the toughest for me, for unlike the action at the launcher and taking the flower, I hadn't personally been at risk at the asteroid base. Chang and Giroux and Thompson and Adams and the others had been directly at risk. I'd sent them away while my ass stayed safely aboard the Dutchman with the sized fingers at the controls ready to jump away should anything threaten the ship. I've risked people's lives even when I thought we had no chance of success. I'll do it again when I think it's necessary. What I won't do is deceive people. Sir, I will talk to everyone on this list. Skippy could handle the translation for me. And I'll tell them honestly what I think of this mission. If they still want to go, then I'll be honored to serve with them. Brenner nodded. I'm sure these people all know what you're going to say, but go ahead. I wouldn't suggest otherwise. Bishop, the best team you can take into combat are people who fully know the risks and follow you anyway. When do we leave? My mind was racing through all the things that needed to happen before the Dutchman broke orbit, and that was only the stuff I could think of. I'm sure I was forgetting a million important things. It would be nice to rely on a super-intelligent AI, but Skippy was too absent-minded. He had also demonstrated many times that he wasn't easily able to think like us biological trash bags. If I left the logistics to Skippy, he'd remember everything except water. Or oxygen. Day after tomorrow. We need to get rid of those two Kristang aboard that troop transport, hit their three sites down here with railguns, load supplies aboard the Dutchman, and leave plenty of time for you to travel out to the wormhole before it resets. He glanced out the open door at his aide, who had been trying to get Brenner's attention. Brenner shook his head. And before our civilian leadership changes their minds about it. But before you fly up to the Dutchman, you need to meet with civilian leadership of the nations involved and meet your volunteer crew. Lieutenant Colonel Chang and some others are already here. The rest are being flown in now. In that case, sir, I'd like to request Skippy bring the Theranan dropship here from Colorado so I can fly directly up to the Dutchman.
No problem, Colonel Joe, Skippy said with enthusiasm. Prepping the dropship right now.
Agreed, Colonel, but I have a suggestion, Brenna said. Before you go up into orbit, stop by Maine to see your folks. It hasn't been announced yet, but the governments involved are giving up trying to keep a complete lid on what happened. Skippy's existence is still a closely held secret, and the governments around the world, aren't officially acknowledging anything. We can't hide the Dutchman. The damn thing is so big you can see it with a cheap telescope. Rumors have gotten out about people coming back from paradise, and it's common knowledge that the Kristang aren't in charge anymore, especially now that we're evacuating Lyon and Hangzhou. We'd like for you to keep it low-key, and don't say any more than you have to. But you should see your family before you go off-world again.
It's true, Joe, Skippy added. We're way past the point where we could hide what happened, if the Kristang ever get here again. It's all or nothing.
I was beginning to dread mornings. When I woke up, and I couldn't fake sleep with Skippy, I had to face whatever trouble he'd gotten into overnight. That morning he was especially cheery.
Good morning.
Hey, I have good news for you. Colonel Joe, believe it or not, humans may not simply be generic bacteria. I think your species has invented a time-wasting activity that is, to my knowledge, unique in this galaxy. That is impressive.
Facebook? Cat videos, I guessed. Computer solitaire?
Skippy kept saying no.
Oh, come on. My shoulders slumped. Other species must have porn.
It's not porn. It is fantasy sports.
You're kidding me.
I kid you not. No other species I know of spends such enormous time and energy on sports to not play sports.
Huh. I had no response to that. Fantasy sports was humanity's claim to fame? Was there some sort of galactic patent office where we could file our invention? I wanted to cash in on this windfall.
Fantasy baseball, in particular, is something an AI can get excited about. So many statistics, so many variables and permutations, and there are so many variables which can't be completely quantified. As far as your species knows, anyway. It's too late in the season for me to create a fantasy football team, but I can't wait for baseball season to start. Will you stake me the money to sign up?
I blinked slowly, trying to run that concept through my brain. Skippy, who could break into any bank computer system on the planet, steal a couple $1 billion and cover his tracks so well that no one would ever realize the money was missing, wanted to borrow $50 from me. I don't have any cash on me, but the Army owes me back pay, so sure, I can spot you some cash. How many fantasy leagues do you want to join?
All of them. All of them. All the ones that are online. I'll set up a sub-mind here to run my teams after we depart on the Dutchman.
Why not?
This is going to be so great. Man, I'm going to slay at this game.
I don't know about... And just wait till you see my March Madness bracket. Also, I want to go to Vegas, baby.
Ooh, I could totally clean up at the blackjack table. And poker?
Forget about it. Those mooks won't know what hit them.
I stared at his shiny lid in disbelief. I had created a monster.
Skippy, you can't go hanging around Vegas.
Why not? I won't enjoy the booze and the hookers, but gambling is my wheelhouse.
Skippy had picked up way too much slang on the internet.
I know, your stupid government wants to keep me secret. You can put me in your pocket, and I'll tell you what to do. I can remotely vibrate your eardrums so no one else can hear me. I'll make it worth your while. You can keep all the money. I just want the action. And I can get you all the hookers you can handle.
Skippy, I don't need hookers.
Really? When's the last time you got some tail? Been a long, dry spell, huh, cowboy? All work and no play makes Joey a dull boy.
No hookers.
Joe, you have managed to surprise me. You don't like girls.
Well, that's not what your profile...
Oh, this is not going well. How to explain human social standards of behavior to a being who thought of morality as a distraction?
Look, Skippy, I like girls. I really, really like girls. I like girls as people, human beings. There's nothing wrong with the call girls. I'm just not interested. I like to talk with girls, okay? Not just drop money on the bed and, you know, do it.
And I'm on active duty. I can't go hopping around Vegas stealing money, because that's what it would be. That's not true. Even for me, there's a tiny element of chance involved. That's what makes it a challenge. Why is it stealing if I play blackjack, but not when the casino stacks the odds against players? I didn't have an answer for him. Skippy, I promise that I will ask, now that I thought about it, I had no idea who was in charge of handling Skippy other than the president herself, which she didn't have time for. Surely everyone involved wanted their military service or agency to be in charge. I'll ask about... That avoided the question of who I was asking. You've taken some side trips. We can say it's for cultural familiarity or something like that. Or you can tell your prez that I either go to Vegas or I go to China and hit the Macau casinos while I'm there. Ooh! Or we can go to both. Tell people it's to compare cultures or some bullshit like that. The blackjack dealers in Macau must speak English for you, right? If not, I can teach you. I could see myself eating aspirin like Tic Tacs if I had to be around Skippy 24/7. I said I'll ask. I don't know if we're going to China. We may not have time. Please don't go doing anything that could get us in trouble, please. You know what? If you're so interested in calculating odds, why don't you tell me the winning lottery ticket numbers? If there were still lotteries across the USA, a lot of things may have changed since I'd left. Too easy. Easy. Those are completely random numbers. They use ping pong balls. Yeah, of course it appears to be random. Why would that stop? Oh, I keep forgetting how linear your species thinking is. You have no idea how the quantum... Damn, I can't tell you anything without drastically interfering with the development of your species. There are restrictions in your programming again? No, it's immoral. His tone of voice implied a duh. He didn't speak aloud. Immoral. You? I know it's hard for you to believe, but on the important questions, I am very strict on morality. So playing poker and ripping off casinos? It is morally wrong to let suckers keep their money. Otherwise, they don't learn anything. And casinos? Come on, they're the ones ripping people off. I did say the important moral questions, didn't I? Money isn't important. On my way to a meeting with the ambassadors from Britain and China, Skippy and I were accosted in a conference center hallway by Dr. Constantine. Sergeant! Sergeant Bishop! He called, out of breath. I need to speak with you. Oh, shit, I muttered under my breath. I didn't know this jerk was here. I knew it, Skippy grumbled. I reprogrammed his alarm so he'd wake up late, but he got up on time anyway, dammit. Sergeant, I wanted to say that I'm excited to be going on the mission. I hope I'll have opportunities for further discussion with the... Constantine stumbled over his words. With the Skippy. I gave him my best frosty gaze. It's Colonel Bishop. I pointed to the silver eagles on my collar. Eagles that again faced toward the olive branch rather than the arrows. I'm commanding the mission, and I didn't see your name on the volunteer list. What? He said, in shock over either me being in command or his name not being on the list, or both. I assure you, your name was on the list, Skippy explained, but I deleted your name from the database. Colonel Joe doesn't like you. I don't like you, so you're not going. This can't be, Constantine sputtered. Colonel Bishop... He said my rank as if he could hardly believe it. Surely you understand that a person of your rank, he was really struggling with the whole social skills thing, cannot allow personal feelings to interfere with having the most qualified people on the, aboard the ship, under your command. No offense, but I will talk to your superiors. They understand that it is vital we have our best people on this voyage. If he truly means what he said, he very much needed to get a clue on the concept of no offense. Talk to anyone you like, Skippy said acidly. The only way to get up to the Dutchman is on a Theranin dropship that I'll be piloting, and if you're aboard, that dropship isn't going anywhere. Dr. Constantine, I checked up on you after we met in Colorado Springs, I admitted. And from what I've read, you are one of the truly brilliant minds of the 21st century, I conceded. The guy had started college at MIT when he was 14 years old, and he'd already won several major scientific prizes before that. I couldn't even comprehend the title of papers he'd written, let alone grasp the content. His face beamed with a smile before I could crush his hopes. Unfortunately, your colleagues think you are also one of the great assholes of the 21st century. You rub everyone you work with the wrong way. He'd been fired from, forced out of, or invited to leave top scientific institutions around the planet. In a field that had to generate as many titanic egos as brilliant scientific breakthroughs, how big of an asshole did you have to be to stand out to the point where supremely talented people couldn't work with you? You are correct that I need to have the most qualified crew under my command, I emphasized the last part. I'll be responsible for 70 people on a dangerous mission away from Earth for up to 2.5 years. 2.5 years, that is, if we got lucky. People on this mission must not only be among the best in their field, they also must get along with other people in close quarters. That leaves you off the list. Your other problem is, Skippy added gleefully, your only qualification for the mission is that you're, meh, slightly smarter than the average monkey, which, compared to me, is worthless. Doctor, you think too much of yourself. The only difference between Joe and you is that Joe is like the dog looking through the windshield, and you're the dog hanging your head out the window. You'll get a slightly better view, but you're not going to understand it any better. I wouldn't advise hanging your head out the window anyway, I added. There's no breeze in space. Joe has a good point, Skippy concluded. Also, if there was a breeze, you'd get drool all over the ship behind you. Constantine looked to me as if species solidarity was going to make me plead his case. What he didn't realize is the universal concept in effect was that a jerk is a jerk, no matter the species. I'll make sure to send you a postcard, I offered. It'll say, having a great time. Glad you're not here. The meeting with the Chinese ambassador started almost as well as my hallway encounter with Dr. McJerkoff. It seems that while the governments involved had agreed to send in the Dutchman out, which to me amount to a forehead-slapping duh of a decision, there was less agreement about putting me in command. The British ambassador shook my hand, wished me good luck, and made a point of mentioning the SAS team that was his country's contribution to the Dutchman's military crew. If the British government had reservations about me commanding the mission, they were way too polite to say it. Or they calculated it wasn't worth fighting over. The Chinese ambassador was more direct. China had a 2-star Air Force general, a guy with an impressive resume, who they thought should command the mission. The Chinese had no problem with me being aboard the ship, especially as a liaison with Skippy. But even though I was now a colonel again, a 2-star would outrank me by a considerable amount of authority. General Schmidt was a special White House advisor who had been appointed to smooth relations with our allies about the Dutchman's voyage. Schmidt tried to negotiate with the Chinese, but General Brenner was not listening to any of that.
"Then we'll promote Colonel Bishop to a 3-star general," Brenner glared. "Or hell, a 5-star if we have to. We're not playing this game with you."
The Chinese ambassador must have decided the time for diplomacy had passed. "American arrogance is astonishing. Your country is not a superpower in space, yet you act as if..."
"Hey, hey!" Skippy fairly shouted. "Quit with the jibber-jabber." That had become one of Skippy's favorite expressions. "You brainless apes do whatever you want about titles and uniforms. It doesn't mean a damned thing to me. Joe's rank can be Grand Exalted Poobah or Bobo the Clown, and he'll still be captain of the ship. You got that? If you gang of flea-bitten monkeys want to come along, then you accept that Colonel Joe is in charge."
Bobo the Clown. I wondered right then, which was amazing how much my mind could wander, did clowns have rank? Did a clown with a big red nose outrank a clown with a...
"He is young and inexperienced," the Chinese spoke slowly, diplomatically, addressing Skippy directly. "What is special about Colonel Bishop?"
I had been wondering the same thing.
"I don't need to explain myself to you," Skippy sniffled. "But you're going to keep bugging me about this, so I'll tell you. Joe is the only one of your underdeveloped species who treats me as a being, as a person, right from the start. The rest of you monkeys consider me to be a machine, and you're afraid of me. Joe gave me a name. I've only ever had a designation before. Now I have a name. Joe, you said I'm an asshole, and the reason you said that is because you're holding me to the standard of a fully sentient being. A machine can't be an asshole. Only a person can. You treat me as a person. As an equal." I was genuinely touched.
"Thank you, Skippy. I didn't, you never said anything about that before.
I was hoping you'd figure it out by yourself. Alas, that was never going to happen with your slow brain.
And you're still an asshole, I see. Proving my point exactly, Skippy said smugly.
Mr. Skippy, the Chinese ambassador had a pained look on his face about calling a super-intelligent AI Skippy, which I wondered about. Skippy didn't mean anything in Chinese, so why did they care? Unless they were embarrassed for us. And whatever.
It is understandable that you are more comfortable with having a familiar person aboard the ship. But is he the best person to be in command? Making contact with the collective is your priority. Should you not have a commander who can best assure success of the mission?
Sure. That makes sense, Skippy agreed. Give me a list of candidates who have more experience than Joe in command of alien starships and I look at it. Until then, you shut the hell up.
It was clear the Chinese ambassador was not going to follow Skippy's advice to keep his mouth shut, so I held up an index finger.
Mr. Ambassador, one moment, please.
I gestured for the other Americans to huddle in the corner of the room.
What if I command the ship, and Lieutenant Colonel Chang is in charge of the crew?
Schmidt tilted his head toward General Brenner.
That would allow the Chinese to save face. What do you think?
I think we don't need the Chinese on this mission, and if they don't want to play ball, they can stay home, Brenner growled, while shooting a look at his Chinese counterpart across the room.
And the President wants this to be a multinational mission, and it's our job to make it happen successfully, Schmidt reminded gently. We need to work together to rebuild this planet. And once we humans get up there in our own ships, he pointed toward the ceiling, we need a unified human force. Can you live with this arrangement?
Americans, under Chinese command, Brenner scoffed.
And with me in overall command, sir, I pointed out. And nothing happens unless Skippy is okay with it anyway.
Brenner's jaw worked back and forth like he was chewing on something he just couldn't swallow.
I know Chang, sir. He's a good guy.
A good guy? All I'd done there was remind Brenner that he was handing command of the mission to a young, inexperienced sergeant, regardless of what insignia was on my uniform.
Colonel. Brenner looked me in the eye, and I was determined not to flinch.
After you jump away, you're on your own. I think letting our allies save face is less important than maintaining a clear chain of command, and I think this arrangement is courting trouble. But it's your call. After you jump, it will all be your call.
It was odd not to look away when he said that, but I didn't.
Shit. Now I was doubting myself. It was too late to change my mind now.
I can make it work, sir. If Chang causes trouble, I'll ask Skippy to lock him in his cabin. That came out like a joke. Chang knew from experience that nothing happened aboard the Dutchman without me and Skippy knowing about it and approving it. Another officer might have ideas of seizing control. Chang would not. And, I hadn't told anyone, having Chang take care of the crew relieved me of the associated administrative bullshit. Bonus, as far as I was concerned.
We're agreed then, Schmidt nodded to me.
That was a good idea, Colonel Bishop. You'll need diplomatic skills to lead that multinational crew out there. Maybe you are the right person for the job.
Thank you, sir.
Schmidt frowned.
While we have a moment, I need to ask about Dr. Constantine.
I groaned inwardly, ready for a fight. His personality makes him unsuitable for a long voyage in close quarters, sir.
To my surprise, Schmidt beamed.
Good. That's good. All right, he's off the list.
Just like that? I asked.
Yes. Constantine has powerful supporters, but if the mission commander says his personality profile is unsuitable, I don't think anyone could argue about that. The White House has been looking for an excuse to leave him off the mission roster.
The Chinese ambassador accepted with enthusiasm the idea of putting Chang in charge of the crew. He proposed that Chang be officially appointed executive officer to formalize his authority, and I agreed. Peace and harmony among the crew, Dr. Constantine off the roster, an opportunity to see my parents before we departed. Those were all good signs in favor of our voyage. A voyage of undetermined length and a hostile galaxy aboard a captured ship with limited spare parts. A ship we didn't understand, guided by an absent-minded alien AI who had only a vague idea of where we were going. What could possibly go wrong?
Chapter 19, Outbound. All decks report ready for departure, Captain, Desai said from the pilot couch. To her right was a U.S. Air Force captain who had been flying F-22s. He was probably a good guy and an outstanding pilot, and I needed to keep that in mind whenever I saw one of the new people aboard the Dutchman. People who hadn't been with UNEF, hadn't gone into space before, hadn't been at Camp Alpha or on Paradise, hadn't captured two enemy ships and raided a heavily guarded asteroid base. They were good people. They weren't yet my people. And for them to truly be part of the team, they had to prove themselves, not just to me, to the original merry band of pirates, and to Skippy. What I needed to do was be conscious not to let bias against the new people affect my actions. They had all earned the opportunity to be here. The Dutchman was now packed with supplies for a long voyage. We had enough food for 2.5 years. Everything and everyone had been ferried up from the surface in Theranan dropships remotely piloted by Skippy. Except Desai. She had piloted her own dropship. I'd encouraged her to do that, to make a point that she was our chief pilot, and everyone else was a rookie. From the surface. Dirt side. Already I was thinking of Earth as just another planet and not as home. Probably for the best, as I didn't realistically expect any of us to see the place again. All decks report ready. That was another change from our carefree pirate days aboard the Dutchman. We now had procedures and manuals and checklists. We no longer simply relied on Skippy to handle everything behind the scenes. We humans were trying, perhaps not to understand how the ship worked, at least to understand how to make the ship do what we needed. If we were able to press buttons and program a jump, and the ship jumped roughly where we wanted it to, then even if we had no idea how jump technology worked, it was good enough. Skippy told me that humans being able to fly the ship without him, even in the most rudimentary fashion, bordered uncomfortably on humanity becoming a star-faring species. If we were a star-faring species, some feature in Skippy's programming was supposed to prevent him from interacting with us. It hadn't happened yet, and I was hoping that the definition of star-faring species required us to understand the technology and build our own ships, which wasn't likely in my lifetime, according to Skippy. Being able to make the Dutchman do what we needed was our only hope of getting home, and Skippy understood that. We'd had a heart-to-heart, or heart-to-beer-can talk about what he expected when we found the Collective. He had no expectations, as his memories were still frustratingly blocked. What he had were hopes. Hope that the Collective still existed in the vague way he did remember. Hope that they would communicate with him and accept him into their network, civilization, or whatever it was. Hope they could explain who he was, where he came from, and how he got left orbiting Paradise in a derelict ship until it fell out of orbit. The pain in Skippy's voice when he spoke about it made me, too, hope he found the answers he was seeking. Skippy warned me that the Collective might not look kindly on his having helped us low-tech biological creatures to capture a starship. They might even disable the ship. He couldn't make any promises, and I understood. I appreciated his honesty. As to my own honesty, I did talk to each of our volunteers, and after I'd given my speech about our mission objectives and how I thought the odds were against us ever coming home again, no one dropped out of the mission. None of the 14 scientists aboard wanted to miss an opportunity to explore the galaxy, and all the military personnel aboard were eager to ensure the wormhole stayed shut down permanently. When I explained to a Marine Corps major, who wore a bronze star on his uniform, that the plan, if you could call it that, was to roam around the galaxy until Skippy found a way to contact a Collective that might not exist, and then I had no idea what would happen after that, the major simply shrugged. "Hell, that's a lot more clear than most mission briefs I got as a second lieutenant in Iraq." The reason I was aboard this probable suicide mission is that I promised Skippy to help him locate the Collective, and so far he'd kept up his end of the deal. Everybody else was aboard out of a sense of duty or adventure. Foolish, maybe, but entirely honorable. My mother had cried her eyes out when I'd announced that, having just arrived, I was heading back up into space again for an unknown duration. My father had nodded and shook my hand and tried to look stoic, because that is the bullshit way men in my family have always been. And I bear-hugged him, and we both cried. My parents were proud of me, without knowing what I'd done. All they knew is that I landed on the road in front of my parents' house in an alien dropship, and that duty required I go back into space quickly. There were no cheeseburgers on the grill this time.
Beef wasn't something that had seen the inside of my parents' kitchen recently. But there was chicken on the grill, a chicken raised in my parents' backyard, and it was delicious. My sister had to settle for a phone call with me. She was working in Boston, and she'd wished me luck and asked if it was true that the Kristang were never going to appear in our skies again. Yes, I assured her. Things were back to normal. If anyone could remember what normal had been before Columbus Day. Humanity had a Kristang troop ship in orbit, now empty of Kristang and cleared of booby traps. A troop ship that could only be reached by old-fashioned chemical rockets, because Skippy had insisted we couldn't leave even a single Kristang or Theranan dropship behind on the ground as a technological leg up.
Your species went to your moon on your own, Joe. I'm sure they can get into orbit without our help.
There were no Kristang left alive in the smoking craters near Hangzhou, Leon, and Durango, and the amount of dust kicked up by the railgun impactors meant humanity would be treated to spectacular sunsets for a couple months. I looked down at my iPad, which Skippy had wiped of software and replaced with his own. It displayed status of critical ship systems in a way that made sense to me, however redundant Skippy said that was. It was also filled with all kinds of courses I was expected to take as a U.S. Army officer, and one of the Army lieutenants aboard had been tasked with getting me up to speed in addition to her regular job. As much as I passionately hated administrative details, I was determined not to be a whiny pain in the ass about it. There were silver eagles on my collar. As long as I wore those eagles, the Army expected me to act like a real colonel. Damn, at my age I was supposed to be doing stupid things and hopefully learning from painful experience. There was no time for that now. I had to make up for my own lack of experience by relying on my subordinates. Delegating. I needed to get comfortable with delegating a whole lot. Lieutenant Colonel Chang was my executive officer. He was in charge of the crew day to day. Major Sims was now back working in her specialty of logistics. She was still frantically stowing away the mountain of supplies that were piled haphazardly in the cargo bays. She felt confident we hadn't forgotten anything vital. Somewhat confident. She'd also, with Chang, drawn up a duty roster for the crew, including assigning people to work in the kitchen that we'd set up in a cargo bay. There were no cooks among the crew. We were all going to take turns cooking and cleaning, including me. On this cruise, there were going to be cheeseburgers. Chang also had a work crew tearing out the tiny Theranan beds and replacing them with comfortable human-sized mattresses. For entertainment, Skippy had downloaded the entire internet and every movie, book, and video game ever made. With Chang, Sims, and others tasked with day-to-day operations, that left me free to handle important strategic matters like dealing with Skippy.
Skippy, you confirm we're ready to leave orbit?
Huh?
Oh, yeah, sure. Whatever.
He sounded slightly miffed that our new procedures meant that we humans needed to confirm things on our own instead of relying on him for everything.
Everything is hunky-dory, Colonel Joe. Warp factor 9 on your signal. Something like that.
Skippy, I said after cutting the intercom to people outside the bridge and whispering into my microphone so Desai and her co-pilot and navigator didn't hear.
We talked about this. We cavemen have to fly this ship after you find the collective and ditch us for AI paradise or wherever you're going.
No, we didn't talk about it. You talked at me. You weren't listening. Joe, there is almost no chance of you idiots successfully flying this ship back to Earth. If anything, I mean anything, goes wrong with this primitive Theranan technology, you'll be dead in space with no options. You have no idea how often I'm constantly tweaking systems to keep them running. Your best people don't even understand how the toilets work on this bucket.
All true. Theranan toilets didn't use water, and they somehow split waste into individual atoms of hydrogen, carbon, oxygen, etc., in a way that our physicists said was medieval alchemy, not science. The environmental systems didn't just recycle oxygen. They created oxygen molecules out of pure energy in a way that violated Einstein's famous equation. According to our scientists, the way jumps were plotted used the speed of light as a variable, not an unchanging constant.
Skippy responded yes, he could see how it looks that way, and no, he wouldn't help us understand how the universe truly worked because such knowledge was too dangerous for monkeys. It was small comfort that he told us even the Maxalts and Rindaloo didn't really understand how the universe worked either.
You're missing the point, Skippy. The question is not whether we are likely to get home again. It's whether that's possible at all. I've got 70 people aboard this ship who need hope, any hope at all,
that they won't automatically die out here when you abandon us.
I'm not abandoning you, Joe. I'm... Maybe I am abandoning you.
I don't want to. As monkeys go, you're reasonably entertaining. You even surprise me sometimes.
That ain't easy, I got to tell you. I need to do this, you understand? I need to know who I am, where I came from.
I do understand, and I'm a soldier. I made a promise to you when we first met, and I'll keep it. My species is safe again now, thanks to you. Whatever you need, I owe it to you, no matter what it takes. That doesn't mean I self-destruct the ship if I don't absolutely have to.
Next to the big red button app on my Z-phone, there was now an app labeled Boom. It had two options. One destroyed the ship in 30 seconds, leaving me time to change my mind. The other option destroyed the ship immediately.
Destroyed, Skippy assured us, down to the subatomic level, leaving no possible trace the Dutchman had ever been hijacked by lowly humans. We'd be gone while Skippy could drift in space, pinging like a Theranin flight recorder beacon. I pitied any ship that picked him up.
Got it. And thank you.
Confirmed all decks and systems are ready for departure.
I turned the intercom back on.
Pilot, signal Houston that we're ready for departure, then take us out.
Aye, aye, Captain, Desai said with satisfaction. Engaging course now.
Several days later, longer than I wanted because we were cutting it close on the wormhole rebooting on its own, and not long enough, according to the scientists and engineers both aboard and back home, we stopped near where Skippy intended the wormhole to reopen. Skippy had wanted to zoom out to the wormhole's track as soon as possible to leave extra time for restarting the wormhole, and he saw no reason to delay. Our technical people wanted the Dutchman to take it slow at first, to rest and retest all critical systems. I was with Skippy on that issue. He was already constantly running diagnostics and controlling the robots that performed maintenance around the ship, and having our human crew double-check Skippy's analysis seemed pointless. Our best scientists had no idea how a jump drive worked, same with the reactors, artificial gravity, or pretty much any other Theranin system. What I agreed to, against the strenuous objections of our scientists, was a 36-hour delay. Mostly, I agreed to 36 hours to give Sims and her logistics team extra time to get all our gear stowed away and to double-check that we hadn't forgotten anything vital, like ketchup. When UNEF, which still technically controlled the mission, urged me to delay another 24 hours, I overruled them and ordered Desai to jump us away. If we delayed another day and found something wrong with the ship, it wasn't like Earth could supply spare parts anyway. Skippy reactivated the wormhole just as he predicted, and the Dutchman now hung in space, close to the weirdly glowing wormhole entrance.
"Skippy, you need to let us handle this," I insisted.
"No, I really don't.
If you monkeys screw up a wormhole transition in the future, it will be tragic for the ship. If you screw this one up, I won't be able to shut down the wormhole, and that will be tragic for Earth. Put your egos in check, and let me program the insertion course."
"Come on, Joe, I'm reactivating a wormhole here. There's a lot of variables involved that you'll never need to deal with again."
Desai turned to look back at me. We were about to enter the wormhole near Earth that had been shut down, a wormhole Skippy had recently rebooted. The displays showed that in front of the Dutchman was a glowing pool of flickering light. In the corner of the display was a clock, counting down until the wormhole shifted to its next point. 1 minute, 32 seconds and counting.
"Captain, I think we should let Skippy program the course this time. I don't mind watching again."
I bit my lip while I considered. "Skippy, how do we know there isn't an armada of Theranin ships on the other side eager to find out why this one wormhole suddenly shut down?"
"Unlikely, but if you're worried about it, I reprogrammed the wormhole controller. This wormhole now has an entirely new set of emergence points. If there's an armada waiting at one of the old emergence points, they'll be waiting for a very long time. Like, forever."
I resisted the temptation to say that is something he should have mentioned before we left Earth.
"Great. Super. Program a course through the wormhole for us."
"Done."
"Pilot?"
I paused. This was it. Most likely the last time I'd ever be within 100 light-years of Earth. All the cheeseburgers in the universe couldn't make up for that.
"Take us through."
"Aye, aye. Engaging autopilot now."
The transition through the wormhole was the non-event it always was.
One moment we were on one side, the next moment we were 100 or more light years away.
Transition complete, Desai reported. And we're right where Skippy said we would be, if these displays are accurate.
They are, Skippy said cheerily. Everything's fine, Joe. No problems with the ship.
Do you think, Skippy, I ordered, with just a tiny bit of apprehension. If Skippy double-crossed us now, there wasn't anything I could do about it.
Confirmed.
The display screen showed that behind us, the wormhole's pool of light blinked out, 17 seconds early.
Wormhole deactivated.
It won't reset, reboot, nothing like that.
The display, which had shown the wormhole as a brightly glowing symbol, was now blank. In deep interstellar space, there wasn't anything other than the Dutchman within a light year.
No, never. The wormhole generator has been shut down, disconnected from its power source.
Like I told you, if you decide to use your magic bean, you need to give it 38 hours to come back online. 42 hours to be safe.
The magic bean Skippy referred to was the Elder Wormhole controller module in the cargo hold connected to my Z-phone that could bring the wormhole back online for a one-time use. For us to get home without Skippy. A magic beanstalk that led home. I'd insisted on having it. Skippy relented reluctantly after a long argument.
Again, it wasn't about us actually getting home. It was about the possibility.
Hope.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Where to next?
Skippy answered. How about that blue star over there?
Desai waved a finger at several blue stars in the display.
There are a lot of blue stars. Which one?
Skippy chuckled with a soft blue glow.
Does it matter?
This is the end of Book 1, but the story continues with Spec Ops, Book 2 of Expeditionary Force. Keep listening after the credits for a free preview. You have been listening to Columbus Day, Book 1 of Expeditionary Force, produced by Greg Lawrence. Executive producers James Tawn and Greg Lawrence. Text copyright 2016 by Craig Allenson. Production copyright 2016 by Podium Publishing. All rights reserved.
Chapter 1.
The Flying Dutchman shuddered again with sounds of groaning and the terrifying shriek of metal composites being torn apart. The displays on the bridge flickered, and the air was filled with alarm bells and klaxons from almost every system.
Skippy, get us out of...
The ship shook violently again.
Direct hit on number 4 reactor, Skippy announced calmly. Reactor has lost containment. I am preparing it for ejection. Ejection system is offline. Pilot, port side thrusters, full emergency thrust on my mark.
Ready,
Desai acknowledged in as calm a voice as she could manage.
Mark?
Go, Skippy shouted. Whatever they were doing, it was more than the ship's already stressed artificial gravity and inertial compensation systems could handle. Normally, ship maneuvers were not felt at all by the crew. This time, I lurched in the command chair and had to hang on as the ship was flung to the right. There was a shudder, actually a wave of ripples traveling along the ship's spine, accompanied by a deep, harmonic groaning. No ship should ever make a sound like that.
Ah, damn it. Reactor 4 is away. It impacted Reactor 2 on the way out. Shutting down 2 now.
Skippy's voice had a touch of strain to it.
Missiles inbound. Diverting all remaining power to jump drive capacitors. Hang on. This is going to be close.
The main display indicated the jump drive was at a 38% charge. Skippy had told us that with the Dutchman trapped inside the Theranan Destroyer Squadron's damping field, we needed a 42% charge for even a short jump, and that still carried a severe risk of rupturing the drive. If that happened, we would never know it. We'd simply be dead between one picosecond and another. The missile symbols on the display, 7 of them, were coming in fast. 2 of the symbols disappeared as I watched, destroyed by our ship's point defense particle beams. The other 5 missiles continued toward us fast, fuzzing our sensors with their stealth fields and weaving as they bored in. 1 more missile destroyed. 4 still moving fast. Jump drive at 40%. Too close. I turned the knob to release the plastic cover over the self-destruct button and turned to look through the glass wall into the CIC compartment.
Colonel Chang?
He nodded, and I saw him flip back the cover to the other self-destruct button, the confirmation.
Sir.
He looked me straight in the eye and saluted.
I returned the salute.
Colonel Chang, we have been down a long, strange road together. It's been an honor serving with you.
My left thumb hovered over the self-destruct button. The ship was dying anyway. This was my fault. How the hell had I gotten us into this mess? I'd better start at the beginning.
Chapter 1 The Flying Dutchman shuddered again, with sounds of groaning and the terrifying shriek of metal composites being torn apart. The displays on the bridge flickered, and the air was filled with alarm bells and klaxons from almost every system.
Skippy, get us out of—
The ship shook violently again.
Direct hit on number 4 reactor, Skippy announced calmly. Reactor has lost containment. I am preparing it for ejection. Ejection system is offline. Pilot, portside thrusters, full emergency thrust on my mark.
Ready, Desai acknowledged in as calm a voice as she could manage.
Mark?
Go,
Skippy shouted.
Whatever they were doing, it was more than the ship's already stressed artificial gravity and inertial compensation systems could handle. Normally, ship maneuvers were not felt at all by the crew. This time, I lurched in the command chair and had to hang on as the ship was flung to the right. There was a shudder, actually a wave of ripples traveling along the ship's spine, accompanied by a deep, harmonic groaning. No ship should ever make a sound like that.
Ah, damn it. Reactor 4 is away. It impacted Reactor 2 on the way out. Shutting down 2 now.
Skippy's voice had a touch of strain to it.
Missiles inbound. Diverting all remaining power to jump drive capacitors. Hang on. This is going to be close.
The main display indicated the jump drive was at a 38% charge. Skippy had told us that with the Dutchman trapped inside the Theranan Destroyer Squadron's damping field, we needed a 42% charge for even a short jump, and that still carried a severe risk of rupturing the drive. If that happened, we would never know it. We'd simply be dead between one picosecond and another. The missile symbols on the display, 7 of them, were coming in fast. 2 of the symbols disappeared as I watched, destroyed by our ship's point defense particle beams. The other 6 missiles continued toward us fast, fuzzing our sensors with their stealth fields and weaving as they bored in. 1 more missile destroyed. 4 still moving fast. Jump drive at 40%. Too close. I turned the knob to release the plastic cover over the self-destruct button and turned to look through the glass wall into the CIC compartment.
Colonel Chang?
He nodded, and I saw him flip back the cover to the other self-destruct button, the confirmation.
Sir?
He looked me straight in the eye and saluted. I returned the salute.
Colonel Chang, we have been down a long, strange road together. It's been an honor serving with you.
My left thumb hovered over the self-destruct button. The ship was dying anyway. This was my fault. How the hell had I gotten us into this mess? I'd better start at the beginning.
My name is Joe Bishop. I'm a sergeant, temporarily holding the theater rank of colonel in the United States Army. Neither rank matters much at the moment since I'm aboard a stolen alien starship over 1,000 light years from Earth. Believe it or not, the United Nations Expeditionary Force has put me in command of our ship, a Theranan star carrier we unwisely named the Flying Dutchman. I have, I think, good common sense, and everyone else would agree, a history of getting into trouble. Big trouble. And a history of getting out of trouble. If you ask me, I've been in the right places at the wrong times. My critics would say that I am one lucky son of a bitch. My mother is not a bitch, but other than that, they may have a point. Skippy, our ancient alien talking beer can combination mascot and artificial superintelligence, says there is no such thing as luck. That humans believe in luck because our dumb monkey-level linear thinking has no idea how the universe works. Now, whatever. When the Flying Dutchman went outbound through the wormhole near Earth, and Skippy shut down the wormhole behind us, I have to admit a tiny, tiny part of me was disappointed that the ship didn't immediately explode into a bazillion pieces. One of our cargo holds has 12 tactical nukes from the American inventory. Now, we only need Nuke 1 to vaporize the ship and erase all trace that humans were roaming the galaxy. But somebody had a coupon, or they were cheaper by the dozen at Nukes R Us or something, so we had 11 extras. No, they aren't available as last-minute birthday gifts. Thanks for asking. When Skippy confirmed the wormhole had been shut down behind us, deactivated it this time, not merely temporarily disrupted its connection to the network or whatever,
A tiny part of me hoped that UNEF had somehow snuck behind Skippy's back and set a nuke to explode right then. You ever been on a cliff or the balcony of a really tall building, and you look over the edge with butterflies in your stomach and you're afraid of falling, but a tiny part of you wants to jump? A tiny part of you that you're afraid you won't be able to control wants to jump.